is digital marketer. Today, it's Ben Griffin.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Marketer Podcast. I'm Jenna Snavely, your co-host, and today I have an awesome conversation to share with you with our lead copywriter here at Digital Marketer. His name is Ben Griffin, and if you've ever seen an email from us, it was probably written by Ben. If you've ever gotten an email from Ryan Dice, it was most likely written by Ben. If you've ever been to our sales pages or watched a video, that script, that page, probably written by Ben. So, needless to say, he has a whole lot of knowledge, whole lot of experience, and he's just like the nicest guy ever. So without further ado, please enjoy this interview with the amazing Ben Griffin. Ben, hey, what's up?
Not a whole lot. What's up with you, Jenna?
Not a lot. Doing a podcast.
I'm here for it.
Quite literally, this is why he's here, folks. You heard it here first on the Digital Marketer Podcast. So, Ben, you are the lead copywriter just across all our stuff.
Yeah, that's right. When you say it out loud, it's a little more of an impact than usually when I think about it myself. But yeah, that's right.
A lot of pressure.
I feel like I'm so busy that I'm not afforded that luxury or lack thereof or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just constantly working to produce copy and words and hooks and ideas and what have you.
So tell me a little bit about where this all began, your love of writing, and then your love of persuasive writing.
My love of writing began in the fifth grade.
Okay.
I won a contest. I won my entire class tickets to the Renaissance Festival.
Cool.
In what is called Plantersville, Texas.
Okay.
It's in East Texas. I wrote a paper about Joan of Arc. Mm-hmm. And I won a contest. And that's, I guess, when I figured out that I could do this and I wasn't bad at it. In fact, I was good enough at it to win something. So that
was... For a lot of people, you're like a hero because of it.
It was a good time. Yeah. We had a lot of fun, yeah. And I think that was reaffirming. It kind of gave me some confidence to think that, oh, yeah, maybe I could do this. And then, I mean, that's like big picture from way back when. Did a lot of writing in high school, worked at a bookstore, so I did a lot of reading as well. And then got to college and decided that's what I wanted to do still. I'm one of those rare kids that, you know, kind of decides what he wants to be when he grows up in some form or fashion as a youngster and kind of continues down that path.
So how long have you been with the Digital Marketer Associated labels? We've had a lot of little other companies and projects by the founders.
Right.
So how long have you been associated with DM?
I think I had my 3-year work anniversary couple weeks ago.
Okay.
So that would be beginning of September. So I've been working with Ryan and that crew for about 3 years now.
Yeah. So how did you go from being a lowly junior copywriter? But I assume, like, first of all, I know your secret. And your secret is that you were a teacher.
This is true. Yeah.
And so what happened going from teaching into writing?
Basically, I was a first grade teacher who also taught a high school English class in the afternoon. So first grade teacher for...
So probably very respected by all your high school students.
Very much so. It was kind of interesting. I turned that high school English class that I was basically assigned to teach very last minute into... basically like a book club or like a seminar. It was almost like teaching a college class.
Like a Dead Poet Society.
Very much so. And those kids actually wanted to be there, which was nice because I can tell you right now, when I was in high school, I certainly did not want to be there.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And so it was cool. And then I basically left teaching because they wouldn't let me keep teaching that class because I didn't have a master's or PhD and I had no plans of getting a master's or PhD because it was a private school. And from there, I went into sales, which... at the time, I was making more money than teaching got me, so that was good. Mm-hmm. But I'd always wanted to basically combine the writing and the sales background, and there's copywriting.
There it is.
So, I mean, that's it pretty much by definition. So
yeah, okay. So then they gave you a chance.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first email you wrote?
For Survival Life?
Mm-hmm.
It was for a knife, naturally.
Of course.
Anybody listening to this podcast is familiar with that brand. It was for a knife. And I will never forget it. It was called The Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to name it, but I wish I would have. It would have been cool. But I wrote it for The Wolf, and the first email I wrote was an absolute disaster. I took it to who was editing my work at the time. They basically told me to go redo it.
Oh, wow.
So I did it, redid it, and then I redid it again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And then it finally worked.
Wow.
So
I know that we probably send 5,000 emails to various segments per year. So all of those emails have to be written.
Right.
Do we currently outsource that task? How does that get done?
I write them.
All right.
I write the vast majority of those. When I wrote them is the only thing that differs. So I could have written them, you know, when I started at DM 2 years ago and we're still using those same mails as controls, or I wrote them yesterday.
Hmm.
It's all a matter of when, but yes, I've written the vast majority of those emails.
Yeah. So you're a copywriter. It's one of the most important skills. Actually, at Digital Agency Expo 2019, Ryan's keynote talked about how one of three things is the most important thing for any agency and marketer. Number one was copywriting. So that being said, what's working right now?
I think what's working right now in copy was what was working, you know, 10, 20 years ago. I think what makes a good copywriter is somebody who is really a historian of copywriting.
Hmm.
Because a lot of the foundations and what works and what's working via email or sales pages or even like for ad copy on Facebook or Instagram or what have you, whatever medium or platform you use, it worked back in the day before the internet even existed.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you study copywriters like Eugene Schwartz and guys of that ilk and Ogilvy and all those old school guys that, you know, that copywriters have been talking about for years and years,
mm-hmm.
you look at what worked then, it's still working now.
Yeah.
But just applying it and tweaking it to a more modern audience, but taking those same principles of what worked back then mm-hmm. and just applying it to, you know, 2019 standards and 2019's audience.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, really, what you're really looking at when you're writing the copy is who you're talking to 100% of the time.
100%. That's why the customer avatar is such an important facet of, I mean, not only everything we do at DM, but all the brands.
Mm-hmm.
Here, and I know for a fact quite a few massive brands out there use the same principles of a customer avatar to determine who they're talking to mm-hmm. and who they're messaging on a daily basis and who their ideal customer is.
Yeah, because it's different whether you're finding them on like a Facebook ad versus they're already a subscriber. They know you. They know your brand. So, Ben, I have a little bit of a bone to pick with you because whenever I read digital marketers' emails, they're all from Ryan, but you're telling me that you are writing those emails. So what is the truth?
The truth is Ryan Dice is a very busy man. And I've had this question asked me before, and I want to answer it this way by saying, mm-hmm. like, you can't honestly believe that Ryan Dice, the Ryan Dice, has time to sit down and write all these emails. Because he really doesn't. He's insanely busy. I am the one who signs off as Ryan Dice. And as far as from the voice perspective goes, I edit for that last.
Mm-hmm.
I write the actual email. I structure it out. I figure out the hooks. I figure out, you know, everything first. And then I go back and edit for Ryan's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how I've been doing it for over 2 years at this point.
What kind of things do you have to add when you're adding for voice? Is it hard to define?
Not hard to define. It's just, I think there's an air of silliness to it. Like mm-hmm. Ryan manages to keep, it's entertaining in a sense, but it's also, it's a way of keeping people engaged. It's almost like these little pattern interrupts, but they remain very uniquely Ryan Dice and his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I say silly, but I don't say that in a pejorative sense.
Right.
Like it's very much like entertaining in a way to get the message across while still seeming like your friend or you're speaking to somebody that you personally know,
mm-hmm.
that you've grown to know over time.
Yeah.
And that's really what I'm looking at when I'm editing for voice and whatnot.
Yeah. So I feel like there's a part of it, not that's easy about writing for Ryan's voice, but that's effective because Ryan just is a naturally pattern interrupting person. He understands how to speak so that it like engages people, so that it is informative, so that it's, you know, rooted in authority. But I wonder if there are people out there who are copywriters or marketers trying to master copy, if maybe the voice of their brand, maybe they'll have a Ryan and the voice of their brand is a little up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the focus is once you get the message and the hook down? What would they do after that?
I think I would look towards taking the voiceifying of our males and applying it to theirs, not by, you know, using our voice per se, but maybe doing that customer avatar and figuring out a voice for yourself, or maybe just throwing in some pattern interrupts in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, that's a lot of what makes Ryan's voice, like we just discussed. And I think that's something that brands who, you know, are lacking in that department, that's where they could, you know, kind of cheat and add various elements to their copy that could either make it convert higher or keep people engaged for longer.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that surprised you where copy is concerned? Something that worked or something that didn't work?
Totally. Of late at DM, we've been, obviously we test a lot of subject lines on a regular basis anyways,
mm-hmm.
but I've been working with Matt Sheeler, who I believe has been on this podcast before as well.
He's known and loved.
Yes, on our subject lines. And we've discovered over the past 6, maybe 7 months that, I mean, short, punchy, one word almost subject lines just on the topic of what we're emailing about. So whether, say it's a promo on our copywriting cert, if the subject line is just copywriting, that has won like 9 times out of 10. Yeah, lowercase, one word.
People, I feel like I've seen that recently.
Totally. And that's because it's been winning. And we've basically been applying that to every promo we've done.
Wow.
I think it just goes to show that our audience, they're interested in what they're interested in. And when they get a subject line in their inbox that is just to the point, something that they're already interested in and wanting to read about, they're going to open it. And that's really, I mean, that's a win for us, obviously. But it's just something that when I started writing copy here, I would have never guessed would have worked.
It's so simple, and I feel like it takes away all of those like psychology tricks of like, oh, you should be speaking to the pain, you should be speaking to the benefit. But kind of when you think about it, the word copywriting is already a pain and a benefit to them. They know their pain is copywriting. They know the benefit of this mail is copywriting.
100%. And I think that's everything to do with it. It's basically introducing everything with one word. Or like, say we're doing something for video ads.
Mm-hmm.
We did the same thing. And I think that might have been the promotion where we determined that this was going to be a winning strategy.
Oh, wow.
We just put video ads as a subject line and it trounced the other options.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's just, again, it's mind-blowing. But also when you look at it and really try and break it down as to why it worked, it makes a lot of sense.
Hmm. So I know that, you know, we have a lot of kind of templatizing that we do. And when we have, you know, especially what we do is we share our knowledge, we templatize our knowledge and then share it with our subscribers and customers. So naturally we have a lot of templates that we use, but at what point, whether it's an open rate or a conversion rate, what are you looking at when you decide this needs to be changed, this template's no longer working?
It's both of those, actually. It's open rate, conversions, click through. And I think for the most part, it's just because they get stale.
Right.
I mean, we have a devoted following and a devoted list. And at no point has anybody around here ever thought that any of our customers were ignorant or stupid or that we could send them the same email over and over and over and expect the same results.
Right.
And I think that's really what it comes down to. I mean, when it starts to fall off, I mean, it's just like when we have promoted something for the 15th time, we're always going to see a dip because people have already bought it or it's, you know, it's old hat. And I think that applies to emails as well. And I think it's just having to update on a regular basis. Like, I know a lot of copywriters will speak to, and especially from kind of the older generations, about controls.
Mm-hmm.
And controls are one thing. I mean, if you have an email that consistently performs over years and years and years, that's great. But you still need to always be testing it and trying to beat that control.
Right.
And when you beat it, you're just going to see those results skyrocket because you beat your best email.
Mm.
You beat the best one for that particular promotion. Or even if it is templatized and you're using it for multiple promotions, you have a better one. And I think it also protects from your list kind of getting desensitized to what you're sending them.
Makes sense. How have you really, really, really screwed up?
I think I'm going to take your question and I'm going to humble brag with it real quick.
Yeah, do it.
Before actually telling you. I think what happens with a lot of copywriters, especially up and coming ones, is when they f*** up, it's because they miss a deadline or they don't give themselves enough time to complete something. That's something I've never done, which leads me to how I have f***ed up in the past. I think I've rushed work a lot and I haven't given certain promotions the attention. And I think, to add your previous question, I think I've overused some emails and let them get too stale to the detriment of an offer or even to our monthly revenue.
Yeah.
And I think it's just basically not giving myself enough time on a promotion, not working through the steps, and really just rushing through it.
Take us through those steps.
So I'm of the school of you want to get your hooks down first, because that's kind of the foundation of an email sequence and an offer in general.
Could you explain what a hook might look like? What's the look of a hook?
The look of a hook. The look of a hook is basically going to be how you, it's something, typically it's topical that you can engage with your readers on. We've talked about this at length in-house, but I'll disclose it on the podcast for our listeners' benefit. I believe it was a little over a year ago that we did that Colin Kaepernick mail. And it was something that we basically just needed to get it out there on a certain promotion. And it was, I believe, for our content cert. And the subject line, I mean, it was like one of our best of the year. I know that because it made our 101 best subject lines list at the end of the year. It was topical and it engaged with people and it made sense for that certain promotion. That's a hook. And when you're coming up with that, you're basically looking at like at all the elements of the product that you're promoting and you're trying to boil it down into an easy way to engage with your audience. And that's what it comes down to. I think that's one of the hardest jobs of a copywriter, whether you're writing a headline, which is a hook in and of itself, or you're writing an email or a full sales page or a full sales letter or a script or anything like that. That's the foundation on what you're building everything off of.
Yeah.
So that's a hook. And that's what I like to try and come up with first when I'm writing an email sequence or writing any promo, really. And then boiling it down to the email side, I like to write out my subject lines first for each mail. So I get with basically our promotions team here and our product team and determine how long we're going to send this for, what are the benefits of the product, formulate a hook, and then outline subject lines first. And then I do a pretty rough version of body copy, which is always going to take the hook into account. And then I try to work through our calls to action quite a bit. I'd say if there's a weakness to my game, that's probably it. But I think that's something that I like to pay a lot of attention to because I'm not naturally gifted at that. I know, I mean, you look at a Ryan Dice or somebody of his talent, they can write out a CTA immediately and it's just, you know, it's gold. One shot. I have to rework mine quite a bit.
So to just kind of clarify a little bit on the CTA, the call to action, I feel like one of Ryan's kind of like those master CTAs are kind of like unlock your blah, 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 blah.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Versus kind of like a normie CTA might be what?
Click here to whatever. Yeah, like just click here to get X and for X percent off.
Right.
I just think it's so easy to, I take it back, it's not easy to screw up a CTA. It's easy to write one down. It's still going to generate a click. It's still going to, if you slap it on a button on a page, you're still going to get some clicks. It's so difficult to write a good one.
Right.
And make it interesting. Because when the reader is seeing that, it's typically linked. Or it's turned into a button. So they know what it is.
They know what they have to do.
Right. I mean, this is 2019. Like people, they're not stupid. They're looking at this like, oh, this is clearly where they want me to click. They know they're trying to get me to take action. And making that interesting is a battle in and of itself.
Do you have any off the top of your head, like any good CTA verbs that you think are in right now that are really hot?
I think are in right now.
Or working. Working means in.
Yeah, one that I started using several months ago. I have no idea where I picked it up, but I know it was, you know, a piece of copy that I had read from another company and I was inspired by it. Or maybe I was watching a commercial or something for like Buick or whatever. I've been trying to use secure, like secure your X discount or secure this before time runs out or something along those lines in email copy.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
as opposed to like register.
Right.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Okay. So at Digital Marketer, we have a Slack channel called the Swipe File Slack channel. We just put all kinds of crap in there. Anything we see that's pretty cool. Actually, it'd make a really cool like behind the scenes thing to give away. We'll have to figure out how to do that. But when you really think about like copy, there's so many elements when you're swiping that you can take. You know, you have the different subject lines, you have the hook, whether it's like seasonal or topical or whatever. Then you have your CTAs, you have your sales bullets, you have all kinds of stuff. Is there anything else that you can think of that I'm missing?
From a swipeable standpoint, mm-hmm. something I've really been looking at, which I don't think a lot of copywriters typically, you know, dive into a whole lot, mainly because I don't know how many copywriters are actually writing video scripts.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to, and I just think it's something that is always in front of me because advertising and commercials on TV or whatever, that's mm-hmm. something that, like, I'm fairly interested in. Is I'm always wanting to see like how these different businesses who can afford to advertise on national TV and these networks or Hulu mm-hmm. or whatever, paying millions of dollars a year with these massive ad budgets, they're clearly doing tests that inform whatever it is they're putting out there in mm-hmm. front of me and other people who are going to see these ads. They've clearly done tests, so they know what they're doing. I often look at that for inspiration as well and to swipe. And I just think that's it's something that is kind of right in front of a lot of people and they don't really pay attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's probably beyond B. There's so many algorithmic tests that they're currently running. That's an interesting point. So, obviously, there's a little help that needs to be given to you, and there's a little bit of training that's happening. So, we're getting some people on the marketing team currently that are helping to write more copy. So what does training look like with Ben Griffin?
I am incredibly hands-off. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell somebody. It's mainly like a guess and check or trial and error with me.
Yeah.
Like, write me something. I show you what I like about it first and foremost because mm-hmm. there's always something to like.
Yeah.
Especially with the people I have the privilege of quote-unquote training right now and working mm-hmm. with. There's always something to like. And then I basically go back and I make suggestions and tell them, like, here's what I would change and here's why. And I think mm-hmm. that's the most important part. And I think it's having taught before, I think that's kind of where I get that mindset is because I don't know if I would want somebody to just tear my copy apart without explanation. And I think that's the biggest part is basically going back and letting them know what could be changed and the reasoning behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And what would make this more effective and why?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to.
Well, and I know, you know, I write a lot of product copy. And so I'll have Ben edit my product copy. And sometimes it's as simple as like bolding something
mm-hmm.
or italicizing. So I think that's really interesting too.
For the record, Jenna requires very few edits,
aww.
Especially at this stage. There's like, I rarely have to do anything. Like, this is complete fire.
That's really nice because sometimes I write it in like 10 minutes. I'm like, well, you're just getting trashed today.
I
did what I could.
I honestly think the best email I've ever written DM I wrote in 15 minutes.
Sometimes it be like that, though.
It's
just the words just come to you and it just happens. Do you know what that email is? Was it a TNC email?
It was not a TNC email. I think it was for our lab open enrollment closing.
Oh.
I think it was when we closed lab trials. I wrote something that was just like, I mean, it was super short and punchy, but I mean, I just remember the click through was through the roof.
That's like, awesome.
Wow, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
So let's break down some of those numbers, what they mean for you as a copywriter. Like what you're like, oh, well, that means this was good or this was bad. So you have your open rate.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
That determines whether your subject line was good or not is really what it comes down to. It's how many people opened your email, the percentage of people that you mailed that opened the email that you sent them.
Do you think if there's segmentation or like if it's something really, really niche, does that affect it? Or do you think subject line is just like always pretty much this is a good subject line or not?
No, 100% segmentation has a lot to do with it, I think. I mean, with the amount of data out there these days,
mm-hmm.
DM doesn't even have a lot of that from a standpoint of like your Amazons or your Facebooks or anything like that, or even like major like retail corporations or anything like that. But like the amount of data out there, being able to determine people who are interested in video ads or who are interested in copywriting or who are interested in social media or content or what have you, being able to segment and send them offers that are pertinent to what they're interested in, I think that's 100% going to reflect on the open rate. And that's, I think, comes into play when I was discussing the one word subject lines.
Yeah.
I think it's just, I mean, it's so topical. You can send them that and they immediately know this is something I'm already interested in. Open. Yeah.
There's your segmentation right there.
There you go.
Send an email that says copywriting and then put them all, or I get like face wash.
Yep. Yeah.
I'd open that. All right. I'd super open that.
Whiskey, I would open.
No, man. So you have your subject line, and then what else is there other than the click through? Is there anything else?
Conversion.
That's, of course. That's, right. Duh. Okay.
Well, no, and I wasn't saying that. I just think that is something that, in fact, I'll go back to the first week I started writing copy under the DM affiliated umbrella. I was getting really hung up on click through rate because somebody told me that's the only metric you need to care about. And somebody who I would consider a mentor, Joe Marshall, who was senior copywriter over at Survival Life. In fact, he was the face behind the brand for many, many years. He told me, you know what? It doesn't really matter. You know what matters? Conversions and how much we sell.
Damn.
And it's really what it came down to. And that was kind of an eye-opening for me. And that's something that I'm always going to be pestering Matt Sheeler for, Justin Rondo, or whoever's basically keeping a keen eye on the conversions. While I have access and I can see it, they're the ones who are, you know, diving deep into the numbers to determine, you know, what's working as far as like whether this email is generating an unusual amount of conversions and why that's working. That's when I discuss it with them, kind of workshop that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It makes sense. When I look at, you know, the one funnel I actually have a hold of, which is the office hours funnel, you know, I'll write the description and I'll have, I'm like, oh, how many people registered? But I really don't care how many people registered. I care how many people show up.
Right. I mean, that's really the tail of the tape when it comes from a copy's perspective. Because, I mean, the end goal is to get people to spend money or, in your case, to take an action. In my case, to buy our products or take a trial or join lab or something along those lines. But, I mean, that's the end goal. And they can make it 99% of the way. And if they don't cross the finish line, it doesn't really matter.
Do you think it'd be different if the landing page was not written by you?
In regards to?
So you're writing your mail and that's sending them to the landing page, and then the landing page is...
Oh, okay. From a promotion standpoint.
Right, right.
Yes. Do I think it would be make a difference as far as like the correlation between the mails and the copy on the landing page?
Yeah. Would you feel like you had less stock in it if you didn't write the landing page as well?
No, I mean, I full stock and fully invested in pretty much everything I write. In fact, when I was over at Survival Life, I was in charge of the emails, and we had another copywriter named Clay Taylor who was in charge of our sales pages. And we had a great relationship. And I mean, I don't know if that was just because we were, you know, just on the same page at all times and worked really well together. But I mean, that still converted at a high rate. But over here, I think it's just whether or not the page informs the mails as much or vice versa. I always write the page first. That's my process. I've actually heard of copywriters, like fairly prominent ones, who do the other way around, which I don't know how I would do that.
Yeah.
I always like to get the page done first before basically writing mails that are influenced by that page.
That would make sense
to me. I mean, everybody has their process, so it just kind of comes down to what you're comfortable with.
Okay. Well, back to the training part. What are some resources that are Ben Griffin approved?
Open Click by John Benson.
Okay.
Wow. Open Click by John Benson. That was the first book anybody gave me on copywriting. And I think I've read it 7 times.
Holy crap.
Yeah, something like that. It's funny. It's interesting. It pretty much teaches you the fundamentals of writing emails. And there's nothing about it that isn't just pure gold.
Yeah.
As far as other resources goes, I hate Microsoft Word.
Okay.
I am a Google Docs person 100%. I know it's like not really a resource, but like as far as copywriters go, like in resources, I have a swipe file. It is probably has, at this point, 30,000 emails in it, which I think compared to a lot of people's isn't even that much.
That's a lot.
It's just a Gmail account that I use to basically sign up for lists of brands that I'm interested in, want to see what they're doing.
And what is the name of that person?
What is the name of what?
What is the name of the person you're registered as?
Nick Jones.
I had to include it because I know it. Yeah. Nick Jones. He'll add things into the swipe file room that's like, hey, this is awesome copy. And it's like, congrats, you're pre-approved, Nick.
Yep. And I love it. I don't know. I think I found that name on the internet one time. I just thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever read. Yeah. And now it's a thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So as far as this process goes, where did you start that? Where did that come from?
When I was over at Survival Life, I primarily wrote emails. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of getting my feet wet. I'd written marketing emails at a startup before that. I was working there for a year and we were doing okay. And then I moved over to DM. And I think it was Richard Lindner who really kind of gave me the you can't just do this by the seat of your pants type situation.
Wow. Yeah.
You really need to like organize it and put down, you know, the whole write the subject lines thing out first was something I picked up from him. And I think it's really benefited my work on the DM side. And that's really it. So yeah, I would want to shout Richard out there because that's kind of made a huge difference in how I go about my daily business and how I'm able to get quite a bit of copy written in a short amount of time.
Hmm. You know what I love about that is that I feel like Richard has helped me a lot with like processes and like event stuff and just like general work.
Oh yeah.
Task stuff. So everyone go get yourselves a Richard Lindner.
The man is all over the place. All over the place with good advice.
Yeah. That's awesome. So now you've entered the lightning round portion of this interview. Oh. Are you ready?
No, but shoot.
Okay. What is your favorite kind of copy to write?
Oh, no. Man, I love headlines and subheadlines.
They're so short.
Yeah. Wow. All right. You got me. No, I actually think it's because I think I've been told many times, whether that was by Perry Belcher or whoever I was working with, they are just the foundation and the rock of your offer.
Yeah.
And I think that's just been something that's been drilled into me, and I just really enjoy doing them.
Cool. Okay. Copywriting hero.
Probably Eugene Schwartz or John Benson.
Okay. Favorite brand to watch right now, copy-wise?
Oh, man. Oh. Chubby's emails are just a constant. I've unsubscribed from so many brands.
Yeah.
I've never owned a pair of their shorts. Not really my style, but their emails and their subject lines and how they send their emails are just so good.
So Chubbies, that's Chubbies.com.
That's right.
Subscribe to their emails because they're awesome. What is your favorite price-friendly whiskey?
Price-friendly whiskey? I'm a bourbon drinker.
And okay, bourbon then.
It is a whiskey. I was just going to explain that bourbon is very hot right now in the market. So price-friendly whiskeys might not be very attainable out there because they get so popular that they basically get bought and put on allocation lists.
Wow.
My favorite whiskey that it's not very expensive, it just isn't very easy to find, is Elijah Craig Barrel Proof.
Okay. What about your favorite, like, I just got paid way more money than I ever expected in my life, and I have to spend it all before midnight. Whiskey.
Have to spend it all. I got to go with George T. Stagg. Right? It's one of those incredibly hard to find bottles, but I could go to there's probably about 15, 20 bars in Austin that I could go to and be like, give me the bottle off off the bar. I'll stay here and drink it.
I wish Richard was in here because he'd be like, yep.
Yeah,
he would. Or he'd offer some opinion other than, oh, cool. Okay, on to the next question.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite band?
Oh.
This is a hard one just so everyone knows because Ben's a music guy.
My favorite band of all time, I would probably have to say, is The Clash.
Okay.
And that's because they've influenced more of my favorite bands than any other band.
That's a great answer.
Also one of my favorite bands. So
yeah.
it's really hard to pick one, but that would probably be it.
Okay. Least favorite coworker. Just kidding.
That's a shitty question. I hate it.
Just kidding.
I love everybody I work with.
Aw. So last question we always ask everyone. If you could go back and tell your 25-year-old self something, what would you say?
Ooh. I was a bit of an animal in my mid-20s. I just didn't take anything seriously. I think I'd probably say, like, pull your head out of your ass and get serious about your career. I was definitely a late bloomer in that regard. Just always thought I was going to be a novelist, and how I carried that illusion all through, like, basically like my mid-20s. I was kind of living that artist lifestyle.
Still plenty of time
right
to write a novel.
But I've settled down, so I might even be the best time to write a novel. But yeah, I think I would probably tell myself to just pull your head out of your ass and it's time to grow up.
Yeah. And that goes for all of you out there too.
All you 25-year-olds out there that are interested in copywriting, you actually have to write copy and able to be a copywriter.
Yeah.
Take that into account and use it and do your best. Go with God.
Do your best. Don't give up. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining me for this interview.
It's been a real slice, Jenna. Thank you for having me.
It's been a great convo. Where can everyone find you before I let you go?
You can find me on LinkedIn. It is just Ben Griffin. My first name is Benjamin, but it's a mouthful, and I actually can never spell it right.
Yeah, we actually just call him Griff here.
That's right. You can find me on LinkedIn, and yeah, LinkedIn.
Cool. I have an awesome day, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Actually, I usually do a different outro, but I hope everyone does have an awesome day and gets their head out of their ass. And Ben, thank you so much.
Thanks again, Jenna. Have a great one.
Bye.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up, because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and 3 unique design themes for each holiday. The Promo Pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.